Welcome to CoinISA, your source of in-depth articles on cryptocurrencies and ICOs. Today I'll be talking stablecoins with Rune Christensen, CEO and founder of MakerDAO. What was the vision behind MakerDAO? Why was it created in the first place?
I initially got into crypto and blockchain in 2011 and got into Bitcoin and thought the technology was really revolutionary. But also as I bought a lot of Bitcoin and tried to use it, I actually lost money due to the volatility. And from that, I realized that blockchain isn't really going to get any traction and get any mainstream adoption unless you have stability. So people can use it for the use cases they actually want, right? So they can use it as regular money.
What are the use cases of MakerDAO?
I mean, it's money, right? So it's literally used everywhere. But what we're looking at is sort of like the low-hanging fruit and right, really obvious use cases in the short run is in particular remittance. Right, so like sending money over international borders is something that's actually very inefficient currently and can be made a lot simpler with a stablecoin. Because what you do is you just, like when Wire, this company I was talking about earlier, right, they do remittance and they use DAI for it, right? And what they do is when they send money from, let's say, America to China, they just buy DAI in America and they sell DAI in China. And now they magically suddenly have money in China, right? And they just did it very quickly and with very low fees because there's no middleman, there's no like banking system they have to interact with when doing this. So that's a really cool use case, and we're actually also using that for like empowering foreign aid and like direct crisis relief through this partnership called Bifrost, where charities are using DAI and like a local Bitcoin style trade network on the ground to actually get cash anywhere in the world in like a crisis zone where you can get it instantly, they can get it even if there's very little financial infrastructure, and also they can ensure that there is no like risk of a government or a bank like freezing the money or diverting the funds on the way. Then other than remittance, what we're looking at is trade finance and like supply chain use cases, which is like just a really huge area for blockchain in general. Because it's very inefficient and like it's very old technology it's currently run by, and also it's just like very, it's just something that really can be automated, but just isn't yet. So for trade finance, what we're doing is we're working together with TradeShift right now, which is a big supply chain platform, has more than 1.5 million companies using the platform. And a lot of these companies are small businesses who actually struggle a lot with payment terms. So the problem is, if you're a small business, is whenever you sell something to a big company, you typically won't get paid until after 3 months. And then in those 3 months, you kind of have like a cash flow issue where you want to order more parts and build more stuff and sell it, but you don't have the money because you didn't get paid for the last shipment you sold. And that's where trade finance is super useful, because you can take your invoice and you sell it off to investors who then buy it at a slight discount. So they get to earn a small return, but they take on all the risk. And then you as a business can just run more efficiently. But the problem is the smallest companies, they don't have access to this right now. And even if they do, it's typically on like relatively bad terms, where it's the terms are kind of set by the financer, because they all know that these small companies are struggling with this issue. So what we're building is we're using blockchain technology to create an open platform where it's just a free market, and where we really empower the small business here, because they get to sell to many different financiers who all compete in an open marketplace. And then what ends up happening is the efficiency and the transparency and sort of the inherent fairness of the blockchain ensures that it ends up benefiting everyone equally, right? And it doesn't end up becoming a situation where the small business is kind of squeezed by its counterparties.
Why did you choose a crypto-backed model?
So we actually like to call it multi-collateralized model instead of crypto-collateralized model. Because when people say crypto-backed, they typically think, oh, it's entirely like Dogecoin or something, right? But actually, like, For a stablecoin to be sound and like for stability to really happen, what you need is something that's highly diversified and highly uncorrelated. Meaning it can't just be like high risk volatile cryptocurrencies. It has to be all sorts of different assets, right? All these like new tokenized assets, like security tokens, and basically all of the asset backed tokens that are coming out. So the reason why we chose this model is because what we realized when we set out to create this system, right, and like solve the issue of volatility in the blockchain, was that on one hand, you need the stability and you need this like volatility issue solved, but you also need to preserve the most important characteristic of the blockchain, which is decentralization. And that's where the collateralized model actually delivers, because it means that on one hand, you can have a fully decentralized system that's just run on the blockchain, it's just a set of smart contracts, but you can, like the individual collateral types in that system, they can be these like centralized tokens, right? They can be like asset-backed tokens, they can be security tokens. But what's just good is that you have a lot of different ones of them, right? So you have many different ones that come from many different jurisdictions, many different counterparties. So you actually still get the decentralization that you want through diversification, right? And even if you have a single counterparty that fails, it doesn't matter because you have so many different ones. And the system itself is regulated to be able to mitigate that. So that's a big advantage over, for instance, the IOU model, right? Where it's just a single counterparty. That then if that counterparty goes down, which for instance we're seeing with Tether right now, they're having some issues, right? It's a big problem to the whole system. In our model, that doesn't matter because that would just be one out of thousands in the long run.
So was multiculturalization always the goal?
Yeah, that was always the goal. Like, I mean, that was our model evolved out of the bid asset model from BitShares, which was a single collateralized model. And basically what we brought to the table was we realized what is needed for this to really be sound money was just like the diversification, right, and proper risk management.
Elaborating on the advantages of this model, because the coin is backed by many assets, it's more resilient to, for example, black swan events.
Yeah, and in fact, it's the most resilient you can possibly make something, right? I mean, this is actually just traditional risk management logic, right? So this is actually the way all financial institutions and banks work, is that they try to become resilient against shocks in the market by being highly diversified and ensuring you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And we basically do, that's what we do, except we do it like with the power of the blockchain, right? So instead of a bank where they sort of promise that it's highly diversified and they promise to have their shit in order, we actually deliver that on the blockchain, right? So you can go in and you can verify it directly. You can, you know, you can audit it in real time. You can see exactly the assets that are on the blockchain that are in our smart contracts. So not only do we have that, like, that diversification and that financial, like, that traditional financial scientific expertise and, like, the logic and the theory to make something properly stable, but we also have that, like, crypto economic guarantee that what you see is what you get, right? You can audit in real time yourself. You don't have to trust someone else to say that our things are safe, right? You can actually go and verify it yourself.
Which assets will back DAI in the next iteration?
So when multi-collateral DAI launches, which we're aiming for this winter, we are basically aiming to have every single high quality asset that's available on Ethereum as collateral. So right now, I mean, we're looking at a lot of ERC-20 tokens, obviously, and then a lot of these like emerging asset-backed tokens. So one token we've already announced that we're going to support is Digix Gold, which we think is really interesting, right? Because it is this like asset-backed tokenized gold model out of Singapore. There's a number of pretty high quality ERC-20 token at this point in time. But what we're really looking forward to is the coming surge of security tokens, right? So there will be tokenized stocks out of Europe, out of the US, there'll be tokenized bonds. We're seeing that in many different parts of the world. And then there's also like these more more innovative tokenized models, but also primarily out of the US and Europe. And then finally ourselves, we are working on tokenizing trade finance. So basically back to the example with Tradeshift and the supply chain. That's a big advantage of the blockchain platform we're making there, is that that platform will actually also support using the invoices themselves as collateral in the maker system.
Which asset do you plan to collateralize in the future?
It'll always be crypto tokens. I mean, it'll always have to be ERC-20 tokens, ultimately. Mm-hmm. Right? They have to be an Ethereum blockchain for them to fit into the smart contracts. But the good news is that everything can be made into an ERC-20 mm-hmm. token. And the only thing that's preventing that from happening right now, like what's needed for that to happen is basically regulatory clarity and like legal clarity, and then the right partners out in the real world. And what we're seeing is just, I mean, the traditional financial industry is moving in this direction for sure, right? They're just moving a bit slowly. I mean, they're taking it step by step. But basically, by the end of 2019, I expect that there will be significant assets available in like a tokenized form from pretty much every major asset class, right? So there'll be stocks, commodities, bonds, and there'll be even stuff like real estate and then trade finance. And then the final thing we're also going to support, and actually that we know will be available at launch, is other stablecoins. So like the IOU stablecoins, right? So while we think that there could be, like there is some like downsides to the IOU stablecoin model if you just rely solely on that, right? Because you're basically putting all your eggs in one basket. It really shines, like the IOU stablecoin model really shines when you combine it together with DAI. Because then what you get is like an extremely efficient system for moving in and out of crypto, because the IOU stablecoins are so good at like for onboarding and off-ramping, right? And then combining that with DAI, where you have this like long-term stability and like resilience in a decentralized setting.
How is MakerDAO and its tokens different from other stablecoins on the market?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting that we are pretty much the only multi-collateralized stablecoin that exists, given that that's the best model, right? So but maybe that comes down to the fact that we're 3.5 years old, right? So we really thought about this for years, and we designed it out of first principles. We didn't just like jump on the stablecoin bandwagon. We made it. But basically, right, it's like there are other two types, there are two major types of stablecoins, right, other than the multi-collateralized model. One is the IOU token, which is the stuff like this Tether. It's, Gemini, USD, Circle, USD, and a whole bunch of others. Like there's also a Euro IOU token. There's like a Swiss franc. There's Australian dollar. There's all these like different IOU fiat tokens coming out. And the problem again is all of them has the issue that they're centralized basically. So it's basically giving up the biggest advantage of the blockchain, right? You have to let go of decentralization if you want to build your application on top of these stablecoins. So in general, we're not really seeing that. Like, we're seeing some use from them on, for instance, on centralized platforms like centralized exchanges, right? But we're not really seeing decentralized applications adopting these IOU stablecoins, because then they become centralized, right? It's kind of like instead of building your application on the blockchain, you're building your application on the bank. So that's where DAI really has a big advantage, because DAI is decentralized, but still has this like sound, real asset, like auditable and sort of trustworthy backing that the IOU stablecoins also have. And then again, also what we actually will do is we will include the IOU stablecoins themselves into the collateral portfolio of DAI and use them as on and off ramps for the system. And just to clarify, like why someone ever would want to use another stablecoin to borrow DAI, for instance, because that seems counterintuitive, right? In fact, like this will not be people who will do that. Like people will not be doing this. Like it won't be regular people, basically. It'll only be like highly specialized market makers, right? So it'll be the kind of traders who specialize in providing liquidity for someone who wants to get in and out of crypto. They will be using CDPs and these IOU stablecoins to give them massive leverage when they're providing this liquidity. And that means it'll be a lot cheaper for them to provide that liquidity, which ultimately results in very low spreads and thus gives DAI that it makes it almost possible to just like move one-to-one from money in your bank and money in DAI.
Let's talk a bit more about the future. How is MakerDAO going to develop? What is the dream? How does it look like when DAI becomes mainstream?
So in the short run, I mean, what we're really hoping to see is that when people make new decentralized applications and when people build stuff with blockchain, they will just not have to worry about that issue of volatility anymore, right? And that means blockchain will suddenly become this like very real tool that will be used all over the place, because it'll be a really easy way to, for instance, build fintech applications and like build some sort of like programmable value transfer system, or just like actually also just like an easy way for a business to set up a bank account. So like if you want to start doing business. You're like a couple of people who want to do some business basically anywhere, right? In particular, if it's in the developing world or something where it's not as easy to get bank accounts, they'll just immediately set up like a multi-sig with DAI, and that's going to be like the new way to basically do something like that, right? Where you want to do something slightly more advanced with your money than just holding it in cash. DAI will be the easiest way to do that, right? And then the other thing that we see happening pretty soon is that it's just like this remittance use case really exploding. So really the liquidity of DAI against fiat currencies all over the world will just grow dramatically very quickly, because it's going to be the cheapest way to move money around. And that should result in remittance costs going down and just like resulting in a more connected world financially, right? Where it becomes a lot easier for people to work abroad and send money back home, especially again if they're from the developing world. And in general, that's really where we imagine that regular people will see an impact in the short run, will be like in the developing world, where right now there's all those 2 billion unbanked people. There's so many people who are either cut off entirely or just don't really have very, very good financial services. And that's where the proliferation of DAI and blockchain technology in general, and like smartphones and technology, will just over the next few years will start making a big difference. And then of course, in the long run, in the very long run, the way we see DAI is kind of as the absolute sort of center and backbone for the global financial system. So it'll be like, there'll be this like, right, like this transparent and like trustworthy and neutral foundation that all financial activity will be built upon. And as a result, the global financial system will just be more interconnected and more liquid and, you know, more efficient, but also more transparent and like more resilient, and like less, more equal and less politically charged. And as a result, that should result in more prosperity for everyone.
The issue of crypto-backed model is scalability, as there may be more demand for the stable coin compared to the collateral. How does DAI handle that now, and how will it handle it in the future?
Very simple example, right? Let's say during single collateral DAI, when we don't even have other collateral types available. Basically, what the system does when it reacts to an imbalance in supply and demand, right? So if there's too many people who want to hold DAI, and not enough people want to borrow DAI, is that the interest rate for borrowing DAI goes down. So that's ultimately how it's dealt with, basically, is that if there's not enough collateral in the system, what the system does is it makes it more attractive to put collateral into the system. So it means you can borrow DAI more cheaply. And of course, the problem is then that this is a general issue with single collateral DAI, right? Is that when you only have one collateral type, you're putting all your eggs in one basket, you're really prone to a black swan event. So it just ultimately isn't that scalable. And that's also why we've been careful with how we've been rolling it out and kind of wanted to make sure that people understand this is still technical beta, because it's still just a single collateral version. But so in multi-collateral, once we have access to high quality collateral, and even just when we have access to, for instance, other stable coins, right, as collateral, it will really be possible to just meet like really, really massive amounts of demand, because you can easily the bond market, for instance, it's enormous, right? Like it's trillions. Mm-hmm. You could easily meet like hundreds of billions of dollars of demand just using bonds as collateral, right? But there's also, you know, stocks and commodities and like real estate. Like there's just so many different types of assets out there basically that are all right now, like every single asset class, there's like a rush to tokenize them, right? There's this like trend of tokenization of everything that's happening. And it looks like it's pretty good timing. Like it really looks like it's gonna match pretty well with like how we expect the adoption of DAI will grow. And ultimately, the system itself again will like regulate this, right? Because it'll basically be the case that if there's too much demand for DAI and everybody wants to hold DAI, and like there's just the stablecoin use case is just so big that there's not enough, like the system is sort of lacking of collateral. What happens is just the interest rate goes down, and that would mean that generating DAI and using CDPs will just be the best way, like that'll be the cheapest way to basically unlock the value of your assets. So it'll incentivize people in a traditional system to actually start moving their assets onto the blockchain and like looking into CDPs and start locking their assets and generating DAI as a way to borrow money out of those funds, right? So it just automatically balances it through modifying the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned a partnership with Digix, an asset-backed stablecoin backed by gold. Aren't you afraid this will bring centralization to the MakerDAO ecosystem?
What we're getting at here is like this like hyper-anarchist vision of a future where everything is on the blockchain, and like mm-hmm. the whole world is decentralized. Is like it's fundamentally impossible because, you know, value only exists in the real world most of the time, right? There's a few examples where you can create like this true decentralized value in the form of reputation, but anything other, like so something like the reputation of Ethereum, like the Ethereum stakers being able to guard the network, or reputation of the oracles in the Augur network or something, right? But in almost all other cases, it's always like based on some sort of real value in the real world, or based on some sort of team delivering some sort of value to the network, right? So in the end, we have to rely on like the existing infrastructure. Like we need laws, and we need like, you know, like legal like claims to be able to actually enforce claims on various stuff, right? But what we can still do in this paradigm is we can have diversification, right? So instead of relying on just one legal system and like one legal claim on one guy or something like that, right? Which is how, like, basically how the current banking system works, right? That's one bank, like, you have your money in one bank in one country with one guy, like, one banker, like, promising you the money, and then one government, like, saying this bank is legit, right? And in Maker, what Maker will do is draw on, you know, all 200 countries, like, 200 different legal systems and, you know, hundreds of banks and whatever, like, tens of banks from each of these 200 countries, and, like, as many different counterparties as really feasible to add to the system. So it's like it can still be, like if you look at each individual IOU in the system, for instance, each individual asset in the system, that asset may be like centralized and rely on a central counterparty and rely on a like a legal system. But it'll just be, you know, the system will be set up so that if you look at one particular counterparty and one particular IOU, it doesn't matter if this one defaults or if this one like is a scam or something, because that's basically like that's dealt with through risk management, right? So the system actually assumes that a portion of the mm-hmm. value in the system ultimately isn't there, right? And will have to be covered by the system itself. And then that's then compensated through the stability fee, right? And that's the risk management. And yeah, so ultimately it's mm-hmm. kind of what you get is that we actually take centralization and turn it into decentralization.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably that's also how, like, ultimately how Bitcoin and blockchain works in general, right? Because it, like, you still do have like a finite number of nodes, right? But you just have so many that are mm-hmm. spread all out so much all over the world that ultimately you can trust it as fully.
So you get all the benefits of centralization, but diversification actually dilutes the risk of it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. And that is both, I mean, that's both the basic principle of like traditional risk management, right? But also the basic principle of blockchain, right?
Mm.
Where you just have so many nodes that even though technically someone could try to shut them all down at once, it just can't be done in practice, right?
Mm.
There's just too many.
That was great. Thank you for the interview, Runa, and looking forward to the multi-collateralized DAI coming this winter. Thank you so much for listening. And if you're looking for more in-depth content on cryptocurrencies and ICOs, go to coinisea.com.